you're listening to Blast Processing, the official podcast of all things video gaming, gadget, and gear related on DVDverdict.com. On this week's episode, Steve spends more time in Skyrim, Kev spends more time in Skyrim, and John, well, he spends more time in Skyrim. Then we talk about what games we haven't been playing. Good evening, or afternoon, or morning, whatever the case may be. Right now it's evening, where I am. You're listening to Blast Processing, the official video game, gadget, and gear-related, and shabazazibazibza podcast on DVDverdict.com.
We are going to talk about gadgets today, at least one gadget.
We are talking about gadgets.
At some point.
We are going to talk about gadgets. With me are my usual cohorts, my compadres, the men who rode across the Mexican border and robbed the stagecoach with me, and, you know, when then we all retreated to Bolivia and had to jump off cliffs when the Federales closed in on us. I got Mr. Kevin Mulridge.
No blades, no bows.
Leave your weapons here. And Mr. John Mercer.
I can't top that. I was going to make some, like, super lame, you know, get equipped with awesome remark, but I can't top Robin Hood. If you would be free, mate.
Join me! Fight! Join Robin Hood! Feather mullet for the win. Okay, so before this turns into an episode of Objection, let's move on.
Mm-hmm. Which is not as cool as Blast Processing.
Oh, come on now. Let's not attack our brother and cousin podcasts.
I'm not attacking, I'm just stating the obvious.
Okay, fair enough. Alright. We would love to tell you all about some of the new games that were released in the last week, week and a half, maybe even 2 weeks. Like, you know, there was Assassin's Creed Revelations, which apparently finishes off the Assassin's Creed storyline in high fashion. If you're a fan of the storyline, if you're not, apparently stay away from it. Don't start with Revelations. There was Saints Row the Third, which looks absolutely ridiculous.
It does look ridiculous.
You know, I think there's a Tron mission in there.
Is there?
There's references to Blade Runner, and
there's
flying police cars.
Giant dildo sword. My wife is incredibly excited.
Yeah, there's a 4-foot-long dildo sword. Okay, and of course there was the latest entry in the long-running Legend of Zelda omnibus. There was the Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword.
Which I'm told finally has that orchestral score I've been waiting for.
Well, you know, that'd be nice. But we'd love to talk about these games, but we haven't played them.
Nope.
Because we're busy playing something else.
Skyrim!
I'm going to do it this week.
Okay.
Sorry, John.
You didn't do it properly.
Oh, no.
Okay, John, you do it.
Skyrim!
Oh, yeah, there was a roll in the air there.
Yeah, there was.
Beautiful.
I'm recovering from a flu, so I'm a little froggy. Or a little more froggy than usual, I guess. But,
You feeling froggy? You'll jump?
Yes.
Is that a Muppets reference? That just came out.
I think so.
Yeah, we won't talk about that. This is a video game podcast.
We're talking about movies again.
Is there a possibility of a Muppets video game tie-in? Movie tie-in?
I'd be absolutely amazed if there wasn't, because isn't this like a Disney flick?
I guess so. They own the Muppets.
Yeah, so isn't Disney, you know, aren't they the kings of merchandising?
That's true.
Probably come over 3DS and suck.
Well, that goes without saying.
Frank Oz had nothing to do with Muppet movie.
No?
The new one.
He didn't
declined. He did not like the script, and so he didn't want anything to do with the movie. So they got somebody else to do the voice of Miss Piggy and Gonzo.
Wow.
And Fozzie, I guess he did all three or something like that. Anyway,
because he's Fozzie too, right?
Yep.
That means Jim Henson didn't do Rolf this time.
Oh. See,
that is the one celebrity that you do not mess with.
Yeah, we cross many taste boundaries on this podcast, but that is one that I will not have in my home.
Eventually, somebody's going to listen. Somebody I know is going to listen to this episode. And dude, Jim Henson, really?
I mean, Vancouver bobsledding, fine, but Jim Henson, no, John, no.
All right, how did we end up talking about the Muppets?
Someone mentioned the Muppets movie.
Oh, I did.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we've all been playing Skyrim. extended thoughts. What's been happening since the last time we talked about Skyrim? Mr. Mercer, what are you up to?
My game is all axes. So everyone shows me all these wonderful, you know, magic tricks and, like, sneaking around and all the stuff you can do. Alchemy, making that meat porridge that's supposed to be delicious. What is it, potage or anything?
I don't know. But, I think, yeah, there's some kind of, like, fondue or something in it. That's, yeah. You know, it's moon salt and cheese.
Oh, that sounds delicious.
Mm-hmm.
But, no, apparently one of the major gaming sites actually made one of the dishes in it.
That's right, I read
like,
that.
It's like a if you combine beef stew and porridge. Which nice. Sounds like Irish stew to me.
Yeah.
It does, yeah. Or was it the cabbage apple soup that they made?
No, it was potage de
okay.
But, you know, all this stuff sounds great. But the only problem with that is it doesn't have a handle and an axe head on it.
And, well, skooma and moonsault are not real.
No.
That's right, we can't make that stuff.
I wonder what would replace skooma. Like, what would be the real-world equivalent of skooma?
Vodka?
No, it's got to be worse than that, because it's like an illegal drug.
Oh.
Oh,
absinthe.
Black tar heroin.
Yeah, absinthe.
Black tar heroin, oh my god.
Now with wormwood.
So, kids at home who may be listening,
don't attempt to make skooma. You may get arrested, and they'll tell you have a meth lab in your basement.
Unless you're Keith Richards.
Yeah, then you're okay.
But, I haven't been doing any of that. To me, the only thing the game is missing, like I said earlier, is a pose button. So I can stand on top of a hilltop with my giant battle axe in one hand when a dragon swoops overhead. He'll know what doom waits for him on the ground.
That'd be cool, man. Maybe there'll be a mod. At some point.
A pose mod.
A pose mod.
Yeah, I get myself in trouble at home now. Anyone asks me to do anything, I tell them Dovahkiin doesn't wash dishes.
That's awesome.
So what are your general thoughts on the game? Like, you know, how often do we say, you know, a game is amazing, it blows us away on first impression, and then, like, it kind of softens over time, you know? How do you feel about Skyrim now, John?
Skyrim, as of this moment, is my game of the year.
Woo!
And is quite possible. It's easily the best RPG I've played this console generation. But, I mean, what else have we had? You know, Final Fantasy XIII is a crushing disappointment. I haven't really... I don't have a gaming rig PC, so I haven't had a chance to crack into Witcher 2 yet.
You will. Your time.
But I'm just... It's the best RPG I've played this console generation. It's quite possibly the best RPG I've ever played. Like I said, you know, this is what I pictured Dragon Warrior when I was 8 years old.
This was your internal visualization of Dragon Warrior.
This is what Dragon Warrior looked like in my head. Only now, instead of holding the reset button down to save, I bury an axe into someone.
Nice.
Right? I'm, you know, and to tell you the truth, I'm nowhere in the main story missions. I got about 20 hours into the game. I'm just hanging around with my companion buddies up in Yorvaskar, and they all just broke my heart when I found out their dark secrets.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Not going to say anything, because Mr. Woolridge hasn't ventured into Yorvaskar.
I haven't, Ned. No, I haven't.
And, you know, I've just been wandering the countryside like Kane from the Kung Fu, walking into people. You know, someone comes up and cries to me, oh, Sven the Bird has been kidnapped. I'll journey across the map to the other side of the world, you know, put axe to ass, and then lead Sven back across the countryside.
And don't get kidnapped again, Sven.
Yeah. I cried when my horse died.
Yeah, I've had a bad experience with horses.
It's wicked, though. You know, I ran into a couple of the, what are they called? The Elvish Secret Police.
The Thalmor.
Yeah, I ran into a couple of members of the Thalmor. And my guy carries, you know, I'm like the Clint Eastwood of Vikings. He's got two axes on each side of his belt. He's got, you know, the, I got a, what's it called, Skyforge Steel War Axe, and I've got the Axe of Whiterun.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
Now, keep in mind, guys, you know, I'm sticking on this area of the map. I'm just exploring. This is my first time in an Elder Scrolls game. So, you know, 20 hours in, I'm still nowhere. You know, I've got the Axe of Whiterun, and I don't know if you get an axe for every town you go to. you know, we've become Thane somewhere else.
I don't know. I haven't become a Thane anywhere else yet.
But anyway, yeah, I got that. I got my Skyforge Steel War X. But, you know, I ran into these Thalmor guys, and stuff got a little bit heavy. And that's when I had to unleash what I call the Arctic Eradicator. You know?
Barnabas Bad Axe.
Yeah, Barnabas Bad Axe was taken out of his sheath, and that's my Skyforge Steel Battle Axe, which, you know, is 50 pounds of destruction.
That's like the second slowest weapon in the game or something?
Just behind the Dwarven Warhammer. Right. You know what? I don't care about speed. When you see, like, the first time you sweep a man's legs out from under him and then bury the thing into his chest while he's on his knees with his hands up begging for mercy. You shouldn't have told me that I was a heathen for worshipping Talos.
How about you, Kev?
Well, you caught me while I put a piece of chocolate in my mouth. Hold on a second.
Is that chocolate as good as Spyro?
No, it's not as good. I love the fact that it's a classless system.
It is. It is in the sense of, you know, when you start your game, you're not picking from this list of 30 or 60 classes that is just overwhelming.
You kind of find your class.
Yeah, as you go.
As you play.
Yeah.
And it becomes your class, depending on the play style.
That's really what hooked me in, man.
Yeah. Like, I've always played in former games. Well, one thing, I've always played in Nord, since Morrowind. So I'm digging this, because I've been
putting the hood in.
So it's great. But I've always played either, usually, a mage who's good at one-handed, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I usually do that kind of thing. Like, I played a Nightblade in Oblivion, I think it was. I can't remember what I did.
And see, there you go, right there. Like, I mean, I love Oblivion. Mm-hmm. Oblivion is now my second favorite game of this generation.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're looking at classes. What the hell is a Nightblade?
Exactly, right.
You know, like,
exactly.
you're trying to make up a character, and especially someone who's not familiar with the series.
Yeah.
And they're looking through these class lists, and they're like, Nightblade.
It's a barrier, man.
It's
a barrier.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So this time around, I found myself trying out a bow, trying out the archery thing, and all of a sudden, I'm doing it more and more and more, and now I'm an archer. I can't believe how it happened so intuitively, and I'm just enjoying that play style.
Yeah.
You know, as a stealth kind of archer guy.
Have the townspeople started referring to you as such?
Oh, yeah. Like, some guy was like, well met archer, or something like that. And I was like, yeah, I guess I am an archer. That's cool.
And then I walk into a town and, you know, some guy's like, oh, God gave us two hands. And those hands are great for gripping cold steel. You know?
I'm about 25 hours in. I've been doing a fair bit of the main quest, and, you know, some side missions and stuff like that, but I'm just digging it, and the way the main quest is working out, like, in terms of references to Oblivion.
Really?
How they're tying in some of the old history and stuff
like
that.
Nice, very nice.
Oh, it's just so, so good.
And see, this is something that was a kind of a bone of contention with me, with the Oblivion detractors.
Right.
A lot of people, you know, oh, so the game doesn't have a point to it, it's got a crappy story, and, you know, and, like, it was, a lot of people kind of gave it this, you know, it forsook storyline for open worldedness. But if you follow the main quest of Oblivion and just kind of stuck to that,
yeah,
it was actually a really damn cool
story.
It
was, yeah. It was
a really good, well-executed, and, like, for the time, what really blew me away about the game is at that point, open world games did suck for storyline. There was no storyline in open world games.
Well, dude, they were all great to Final 3.
Yeah, you know, and Oblivion actually did tell a really good story that also allowed you to veer off the path whenever you liked. It was the best, you know, it was the best combination of just open world craziness and yet narrative drive that I had ever seen up to that point.
Yeah.
You know,
until Skyrim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And with Skyrim, I mean, I'm 60 hours in now. I just crossed 60. Level 27 or 28. I think you guys might have saw me go to 28.
Yeah.
And it has me. I mean, I probably don't have to buy another video game until at least next summer.
There's only one thing that I don't like about the game.
Okay, all right.
And it has been actually pissing me off a fair bit.
Okay.
You pick up all these quests, right? And you got your quest log, which just has the name of the quest.
Okay.
What I would love to see in the game is a quest journal. A thing, so you click on the quest that you got, and it gives you the dialogue that gave you that quest.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah, but no, it does kind of, like, to the right-hand side, it does kind of give you a checklist of things you've done up to that point.
That's true, yeah. But
but you'd like to actually read the dialogue.
Yeah, because sometimes the dialogue is a clue to where you got to go or what that quest entails, right?
But now I think the objective markers have kind of like made that irrelevant. I think it'd be cooler for, like, I mean, for you or I, you know, we come from Morrowind and all of that kind of stuff. So it'd be kind of cool to have that, to not so much rely on objective markers and that kind of thing, you know?
That's true. Well, I'm missing objective markers as well, like, because I find I'll make a quest active, one of my miscellaneous quests. I'm like, oh, I'd love to do this one. I'll make it active. I'll go show on map, and there's nothing on the map. And I'm like, well, I don't know a thing about this quest that I picked up at some point, except I've got to find this thing. I don't know where it's supposed to be.
Now that I haven't run into that, but now what you might be doing is when you click on the miscellaneous quest, you have to highlight the miscellaneous thing in the main quest thread.
Right.
But then you have to go into the list of your miscellaneous quests, and you have to actually highlight the individual
quests. Oh, yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Oh, okay, all right, okay.
Yeah, and that's the only thing. I think that could just be a little bit tighter, just in terms of giving you clues to where.
Now, that could be a glitch or something, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, everybody knows it's a Bethesda game, so it has to ship with.
Yeah.
You know, more bugs than a Detroit motel. So, you know, sorry people from Detroit.
Dude, there's no people in Detroit.
Oh, there we go. We've insulted somebody again.
I don't mean the people.
Mission accomplished.
Literally, there is no one living in Detroit anymore. It's like Silent
Hill. Old Detroit.
Old Detroit.
They're all in Delta City. No, yeah, I know. I could definitely see that being a bone of contention, but I haven't myself. I haven't run into it, so I can't really say it.
Axes.
With me, it's just every single thing. Like I figure, you know, after you know the 10th hour or 15th hour, I'd have seen. You know, I'd been like, okay, settling into the groove, and you know, like I love this game, but you know, like okay, I've got the map blown open. You know, with Oblivion by hour 20, I'd been to all 5 of the cities and. You know, I'd pretty much seen what the game has to offer. I mean, not to take anything away from it, because everything I saw was fantastic. But, you know, by hour 20, it became, you know, like, explore, sure, but it's like, oh, another dungeon. Oh, look, another, you know? But with Skyrim, every freaking dungeon is unique.
They're all unique, yeah. That's
every
amazing, hey?
Every freaking dungeon, and every one, you walk into it, and it's like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, it's some cool vista, or some cool piece of imagery, or some little thing that they've done to that individual dungeon that makes it stand out and makes it impressive. Every single thing I have seen has been memorable.
Yeah.
Has been something that, like, you know, oh, I remember when I went into this place and it was actually underwater and there was water rushing in through cracks in the ceiling.
Yeah.
Or, you know, another cave where I walked in and the ceiling had all this bioluminescent moss growing on the roof. And when I look up, it looks like you're looking at the night sky underground. And it was just like, man, everything is it's all handcrafted and every experience in the game has been unique.
There's a dungeon in the main quest. I won't tell you anything about it.
Okay.
Because since you're not there yet. But there was a skylight. There was part of the roof had was gone.
Okay.
The sunlight was coming in from there.
Oh.
And in this big open area, some jungle had creeped in.
Nice.
Right? And there was also a waterfall down there as well. And it was just amazing. And you could also, and I said to myself, I bet you any money there's something behind that waterfall. And there was a little tiny cavern. There wasn't much in it, a little chest with some gold.
Yeah,
but I was like, that's a total homage to you know, to the classic Zelda, you know, go behind the waterfall.
Yeah,
it was just a cool moment.
And, like, it's just, there are times, man, when that game is uncharted beautiful.
Yep.
You know, there are times when the graphics just click and you're like, I mean, it's a nice looking game from the get-go anyway.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, you can't take that away from it. It's probably the prettiest looking RPG I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. You know, but there are times where the game really reaches, like, uncharted levels of environments, you know? Like that first cave where the water was rushing in through the ceiling and stuff, you know? When we saw that, it was like, man, this is gorgeous.
Yeah.
The way the light all reflected off the armor and, you know, like, just such a beautiful-looking game.
When we were playing, you were playing earlier, and we saw you in the High North area.
Yeah.
With all the, like, the glaciers and all those ice pans and the water and everything. Yeah. That was unbelievable.
And it's just, even after 60 hours, I still find stuff, you know, like earlier today I was playing and I found an underground Dwemer city.
Mm-hmm.
It was like Minas Tirith from Lord of the Rings, but it was all built on it was like a cross between Minas Tirith and the Ewok village from Return of the Jedi. It was goddamn amazing.
Cool.
Absolutely amazing. And it's just, this is all just stuff that you stumble onto.
What about the creepy door?
The creepy door? The creepy door that whispers to you? Yeah, the scary door.
You are not worthy.
That was very scary.
It's like a cave of wonders from a ledge.
As long as Robin Williams ain't in there, I don't care. Although these days, I think Robin Williams is actually kind of cool in geek society now, isn't he?
Well, he likes Zelda.
Yeah, he has a daughter named Zelda, and he does game commercials or something now.
Does he?
Yeah.
Chuck Norris just did a WoW commercial.
That was hilarious. That was absolutely great. I am Chuck Norris, and I approve this game.
There are a million players playing World of Warcraft because Chuck Norris allows them to live. I was like, oh, yeah.
But yeah, Skyrim is just, like, the artistry to... just the way it's all put together, the architecture, like, I can't take anything at all away from the game. Like, it is, no matter how hard I try to be cynical, or no matter how hard I try to find something to nitpick, and,
yeah,
you know, outside of that arrow that's stuck in my arm that doesn't seem to want to go away. That's a little frustrating.
I thought we told you to make that part of your legend, you know, your Sigurd one arrow.
Sigurd one arrow. Yeah, you okay.
Know, they fired an arrow into his arm, severing an artery. It would have failed any normal man.
But Dovahkiin
is no normal man.
But yeah, I mean, outside of that, I mean, this is stuff like if when this patch hits supposedly next week, maybe that's gone. You know, maybe that's fixed. That's something I can get past.
Yeah.
You know, but bugs and glitches, I mean, it go with any kind of game that you're gonna get them.
That's right.
It doesn't matter if it's Grand Theft Auto 4 or Skyrim or Fallout 3 or whatever. You know, glitches happen.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do about it. It's par for the course. A game that huge, but. That's the thing. The game is so goddamn huge and so not, you know, like, scripted. So just hand-built. It's like, you know, if Oblivion was, you know, a Corvette or a Camaro or, like, an American-made, factory-built, you know, high-performance sports car, then Skyrim is, like, you know, a hand-built Maserati or Lamborghini or something. You know, it's just... It makes every other... open world RPG of this generation looks silly.
I think we could give two pieces of advice, though.
Yeah.
Oh, my voice just cracked. Did you hear that?
You got his language, guys!
I am 34 years old. It's all right. Anyway, I think we can give two pieces of advice to players. First of all, save and save often.
Yes.
Often as you possibly can stand to be in the save screen. And number two, stay away from goddamn frost trolls.
Frost trolls are bad.
They will kill you.
Yeah, the Penny Arcade guy said it best, you know, like, you slay a dragon, you feel unstoppable. You slay two, you feel like a god.
Yeah.
The frost giants don't give a good goddamn how many dragons you've killed.
That's right.
Leave their mammoths alone.
Oh, I'm talking about the trolls. Frost trolls.
Oh, the trolls.
Oh, is that some screenshot looks like the Wendigo from X-Men?
Oh, yeah, I've already killed a bunch of those.
You've killed a bunch of those?
I've killed a bunch of those.
You're 60 hours in, I guess.
I'm level 28.
With your scimitar that breathes fire.
Yeah, my flame tongue scimitar.
Oh, yeah, flames, they don't like flames. Flames are bad.
You know what else they don't like they're about to meet? Vako, the Axe Lord of Skyrim.
Vako Grimjaw.
Well, I say the same thing. I told you this earlier, but I'll relate it now. Going through a dungeon, pretty awesome. I'm playing as a stealth archer. Killing everybody, a lot of them one hits because I'm hitting from cover and they can't see me coming.
Yep.
I get to the end of it, I find the thing I had to find. There's this one guy who's moving around like crazy. I cannot get a bead on him.
Oh, he's like a guy from Uncharted 1?
Yeah, pretty much.
He's doing the chicken dance?
He totally, except with a greatsword, right? And he couldn't get at me. And I was just running out of arrows. I was like, okay, shag it, I'll just jump down there. I got some healing potions. And he killed me right away. And then I had to start from the beginning, which I haven't done yet because I turned it off.
You know what the answer to that problem was? Webajack.
The Webajack.
I should have used it.
Yeah, Webajack is awesome.
But, again, it's ranged, though. And I couldn't get a beat on him with my bow and arrow.
Okay, fair enough.
Turn him into a chicken.
And then leave. Over. Yeah.
I feel like chicken tonight.
Yeah, so save and say off.
Yeah, and... I will also say I have had a few crashes on the Xbox 360 version. There's been a few instances where it freezes on the load screen and just doesn't come back.
Oh, I am going to say this. This is a quasi-spoiler, but I won't talk about whatever it has to do with. But okay. I have to tell people to do this, because I almost ruined my game entirely.
Yep.
You're going to do a mission at some point. It'll be fairly early on in the main quest. And somebody is going to try to sneak you into a place... And he's going to say, I will smuggle in your gear. What do you want me to take in for you? Do not just give him weapons. Also, give him health potions. Because I just gave him some weapons, stored the rest of my shit... Oh, there we go. I swore.
That was okay.
I stored the rest of my shit outdoors, and then I went inside. I got my sword and my armor, and was like, oh, God, these guys are going to kick my ass. I don't have any healing potions, any scrolls. I got nothing except my bow and some steel armor.
I rely pretty heavily on the healing spell, actually.
Oh, yeah.
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 I find it's one of the things I kind of like about the game.
Mm-hmm.
The way the economy is set up, it's not always easy to get healing potions.
Oh, that's true, man.
You know, I guess you can make them if you're heavy into the alchemy, but I'm not really heavy into the alchemy.
Well, you also need saber eye cats to make it. Saber cat eyes.
Okay, for like the actual healing potions.
Yeah, and blue mountain flowers.
Okay, I was using blue mountain flowers and monarch butterfly wings.
Oh, no way!
But they were only giving me back 15 health each time I used them, which is like... pathetic.
Yeah. You can get that out of, like, vegetable soup, man. I make a lot of food. I pick up every bit of food I can find. And, in fact, that's kind of how I got through that section.
Okay.
Because at one point you go through a kitchen.
Started eating cheese wheels.
Well, on my third try, trying to do it, I was like, okay, I got
Sven
no health potion.
Sven likes cheese.
Sven's going to need some serious fiber later to work that shit out.
He's going to need some potage.
So I said, I better grab all the food I can in here because I'm going to need it. You know. And if you grab 10 carrots, that gives you back 10 health. Why not? Doesn't weigh much.
Sure. I ate a little bit of food.
Yeah.
I drank some Nordish mead.
Oh, I haven't drunk any mead yet.
Yeah, I drank a bit of mead. Mead's
and
good.
You call yourself a Nord.
You don't really get drunk in the game, though.
No?
That I've seen.
Okay.
I don't think you get to the point where you stumble around or anything.
Are we all playing as Nords?
Yeah.
That's probably what?
They're immune to drunk.
Yeah.
We're going to have to test it out.
It's like they're from Marystown.
Dude, they're Nords. Their baby formula was 100 proof.
We're going to have to test it out.
Their baby formula was smuggled in from St. Pierre.
Try to get our characters drunk.
It was makeup honey.
Yeah, we should. Yeah. We really should. I kind of half expected, you know, to be able to stumble around and fall over and stuff. But yeah.
Dude, wasn't there a quest about being drunk?
Yeah, it was awesome.
Oh, don't ruin that. Don't ruin that.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, that's partially what kind of instilled the wanderlust in me, mm-hmm. was that quest, because, you know, it kind of forces you to traverse the map.
Yeah.
You know? But, yeah, I think that was the best experience I've had with it so far, was just turning off all of my quest objectives and just roaming. Mm-hmm. Just hitting the open and, like, I bring up my map screen, I look at an area that looks particularly barren, and I head straight towards it.
It's not barren.
Oh, no. Like, there's not a square inch of that map that's barren.
Yeah.
It is just so concentrated with
little things. If you reach any square inch of that map that's barren, there's going to be giants and mammoths.
Yeah. The only other, like, my gameplay hint, you want to get the most out of Skyrim, do not use fast travel.
Yeah.
Walk everywhere.
Yeah.
Which leads me to another piece of advice.
Don't buy a horse.
Do not buy horses. They... die. I'm on, like, Butterscotch 7 right now.
Now, somebody at my work was playing, and she just found a horse.
Yeah, I've done that a few times.
With, too. Like, a dead bandit next to it.
Yeah, and they just let you ride them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you reach certain camps, like some of the Imperial camps and some of the Stormcloak camps, they're just there at the hitching posts, and it just says ride horse. And those, you don't have to worry about anybody chasing you, looking for gold or bounty or anything. You know, you can just take them and go. But when you get off, they head back to where they came from.
Mm-hmm.
They're not yours, kind of thing. And I'm still a little rattled about the glitch with the dog.
Oh, yeah? What about the dog?
I had a dog.
Oh, right, you did.
And he vanished.
Right.
And I could get another dog, but it won't let me.
Oh.
It says I already have an animal companion.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, but he's long gone. It's like, stray dog, come back! But he doesn't come back.
Wow.
I've tried every night I've gone out on my front porch and rattled dog treats.
Mm-hmm.
He just doesn't come back.
Wow.
Well, because he disappeared through the ground and he's like saying something. He's in Crom's Misty Chairs.
He quantum leaped out of here.
He's on the next season of Sliders.
Oh, no, Sliders reference.
So, has anybody else been playing anything else other than Skyrim?
Yes.
Hey!
Whoa!
Yes. I've been playing three other things other than Skyrim.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, we this is going to be a long podcast.
Oh, no. Not too long. I got Skyrim to play.
Okay, as a quick aside, about a week ago, maybe a little more than a week, I had to submit my review of COD Mod 3.
Oh, jeez.
Call of Duty Modern Warfare. Have we talked about Modern Warfare yet?
We talked very little, I think.
Very little about it? Okay. Listen. I'll sum it up for you perfectly. Call of Duty fans, yes, you're probably going to enjoy it. But at this point, when you're standing in lineup to buy Modern Warfare 3, just ask yourself, you know, do I really need more Call of Duty in my life? Do I want another Call of Duty game? Because, you know, I've had guys come up to me, and the argument is always the same. You know, I always say, you know, they're beating a dead horse. They're beating a horse that died in 2008 after one glorious year in 2007.
Yeah.
Right? They're relying on the strength of that brand name. There's nothing new being added to it. The tweaks they're doing in multiplayer is not enough. They're concentrating completely on the multiplayer. The single player feels utterly soulless. Man, you know, you knock over the Eiffel Tower. And when you knock over the Eiffel Tower and the player doesn't feel anything, you've got a disconnect problem.
Yeah, it's yeah. Michael Bayitis.
Yeah. And
Michael Bay is destroying France. Again.
But man, yeah, you're sitting there playing, and I had guys come up saying, well, you know, we don't play it for the single player, we play it for the multiplayer, you know, it's great to have new maps. Are you paying $70 for a map pack?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I know they, like, they fine-tune the perks and all of that stuff, like all the different little tweaks to the multiplayer, but...
Dude, that's patch material.
And an observation I'm kind of making with the whole thing, I haven't gotten into the multiplayer at all.
Yeah.
But it seems like they're really starting now. Like, I mean, and no, with Modern Warfare, Modern Warfare 2, and Black Ops, and, well, World at War. World at War kind of catered to a different crowd because of the zombie mode.
Yeah.
And then, well, Black Ops kind of... I think Black Ops got a good mix of both. You know, it got the zombie crowd, and it got the
zombie mode.
Yeah, well, yeah, and, you know, it had... It had been a few years since Modern Warfare, or Modern Warfare 2 was, well, a year after Modern Warfare 2, so it had the Modern Warfare players, too, because Modern Warfare 2 was really when it took off, when it hit the stratosphere. And I think with Modern Warfare 3, what's starting to happen is they're starting to fracture their fan base.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's getting to the point now where there are players out there who will only play Black Ops, or who will only play Modern Warfare 2. First Modern Warfare seems to be all but forgotten about. I'm sure there's still probably a couple of 100,000 players online, but it seems that, like, they've kind of... They've all hitched a horse to a specific wagon, whether it's Modern Warfare 2 or Black Ops. And it seems like Modern Warfare 3 just wasn't enough to pull them away from those old games.
Yeah.
I mean, judging by... I went into another video game store earlier this week.
Yeah.
There were 9 freaking used copies sitting on the shelf of Modern Warfare 3 for Xbox 360.
How many weeks has it been out now?
3 weeks? 2 weeks? No, 2 weeks. Not even.
That's insane.
Yeah.
With no like special trade-in promotion? No. That's crazy.
And apparently, according to someone who called in yesterday asking me about a trade-in value on it, our competitors are actually offering piddle for it.
Yeah.
Like, it's below the $30 mark now. For a game that's 3 weeks old?
Yeah. Wow.
You know, 2 weeks old? Not even?
And I mean, like, the worst thing about it is, people ask me my opinion, and that's my opinion on Call of Duty, and then... As soon as I ask it, as soon as I give it, I've got to defend it. Right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, well, that's just because of the stature, the social stature.
You know,
right?
the swords come out then, right?
It's like making fun of Citizen Kane.
Yeah.
You know, it's like saying you don't like Citizen Kane.
I don't like Citizen Kane.
No, I love the Godfather. But, you know, we got to defend it.
But no, I got to start defending and start trying to, you know, make valid points and everything. If you're a Call of Duty fan, you know, you're going to enjoy it. My only real problem with it is, you know, I've already plugged close to 100 hours into the multiplayer of the original Modern Warfare.
Yeah.
It has nothing else for me. And that's my big problem. For the biggest franchise going today, right? For such a monster franchise, to just... you know, giving a little bit more in the multiplayer isn't enough.
I just... My thing with it... And, like, maybe I'm the one who's out of touch here. Maybe it's me who's, you know, like, disconnected or whatever. But the amount of time required... And I feel the same way about World of Warcraft. People who only play World of Warcraft. You know, people who, I got 4 characters up to level 85 or whatever the heck the level cap is this week. You know, like... How can you devote so much time... to one game when there are other tastes out there to be tasted, you know, when there are other flavors out there.
Yeah.
You know, like, why would I sit down and play nothing but Modern Warfare 3 online when it's infuriating me? I'm just yelling at people.
Because you have Asperger's syndrome.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. I don't know. But, you know, like, it's just, okay, why would I play Modern Warfare 3 when, you know, like, I'm not saying not to play it. I'm not saying I wouldn't want to pick it up and give it a go. But why would I worry about 15th prestige and all of this stuff when I could be playing that Battlefield 3, which is another amazing, actually arguably better online shooter. You know, Uncharted 3 has got a great multiplayer mode. Mm. Killzone 3 is still out there and is still fantastic. You know,
there's other stuff out there other than first-person shooters.
Yeah, well, I mean, even, okay, just for argument's sake, say you were just a first-person shooter fan. Say, you know, Skyrim does not appeal to you at all because you have ADD and you just like to move and shoot stuff.
It's a first-person sorting game.
It's not the same. I mean, you know, you're walking for 10 minutes with nothing happening other than exploring, you know? Like, yeah, okay, I can understand your typical COD player seeing that and just... You know, like what you used to do whenever I'd start talking about Oblivion, you know? But I just... There's so much else out there. Like, why does it have to exist in a vacuum?
Yeah.
You know, and it's... I know a lot of it is the social aspect...
Yeah, exactly. You can still enjoy Call of Duty and Killzone at the same time.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Kind of like we had when, you know, when we used to play Fight Night. It's not always just Street Fighter.
Yeah. Right.
And speaking of Fight Night...
Oh, here we go.
Segway alert.
I also put in a little bit of time into the King of Fighters 13.
I put in a bit of time into that one as well.
Okay. And you know what? I'm going to say it, I'm calling it right now, and this is from a guy who, I was a convert in the PS1 Dreamcast days. You know, I didn't rob banks in my youth, I didn't own a Neo Geo.
I had it on, I think it was on Super Nintendo?
Fighters 94? King Fighters was never on Super Nintendo.
Maybe it was Art of Fighting.
Yeah, Art of Fighting was on Super Nintendo.
Okay.
King Fighters was always way too big for Super Nintendo.
Oh, okay.
You know, I was a convert in the PS1 Dreamcast days. This is the best the series has seen since KOF 98. And KOF 98 is the golden goose of the franchise. That's the one everyone always goes back to.
The hardcores.
Yeah, the hardcore always go back to. The KOF 13, best series has seen since those days. You know, it's never going to be as good as Street Fighter or the new Mortal Kombat, but... As far as being, you know, I will take this 10 times out of 10 over stuff like Guilty Gear and BlazBlue.
Yeah.
This is just, it's a fun, tight 2D fighting game.
I was really impressed with it. Now, I mean, bear in mind, I wasn't disappointed with King of Fighters 12.
No, King of Fighters 12 was great.
I enjoyed
if you're sitting with a buddy on a couch.
On a couch playing it, yeah. Which is, I mean, how we usually play our fighting games. And my whole thing with that game, I like the back-to-basics approach. I know a lot of people were pissed off about missing moves and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I kind of liked that it went a little bit back-to-basics, and I liked that it was tightened up a lot. Like, Fatal Fury, Art of Fighting, King of Fighters always had this really loose SNK style to it. Like, the controls felt really sloppy.
It was always sloppy.
But KOF 12 tightened things up. 13, to me, is like the finished product.
Yeah.
You know, they took 12, they let it gestate for another 2 years, and bam, here you go. Here's 13, you know?
Well, they had 20 more characters to it.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, it looks great for a 2D fighter. It looks fantastic. The backgrounds are gorgeous. Awesome soundtrack.
The animation is
fantastic. Fantastic.
They've got their, you know, their little animations they do.
Yeah.
You see little things like one guy's just standing with his face going, and it'll stop for a second and just,
wiggle his fingers,
or whatever. You know, one guy there, one of his super moves, he dashes in and hits him in the first hit, moves so fast he leaves his sunglasses behind, and as he hits them, they'll freeze in place, and he reaches up and grabs the glasses, they're falling down, puts them back on, and then proceeds with the beatdown. You know, proceeds to uncork a 30-hit combo.
Yeah, I mean, like, everybody, you know, I mean, the SNK series in general are often overlooked by the North American fight fans. They got their hardcore followers, but they're usually overlooked. But I'll put it out there. I'll say it right now.
Yeah.
For pure fighting game fans, so like for guys who just really like their bread and butter is 2D or versus fighters.
Yeah.
Like if you, myself, Tony, and like Mark Johnson and a few of those guys sat down with King of Fighters 13, we would have a ball.
Yeah.
We would have a blast with that game. You know,
like, and there would be countless. countless Super Argentine backbreakers. I'm a
player. So there have been 13 King of Fighter games.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, up until 11, they were always done.
It was like a yearly
iteration.
Oh, yeah. I see.
Basically, it was the same game with some new characters added, different backgrounds.
Right,
like
it was
Street Fighter.
Now, to SNK's credit, though, they would actually shuffle out characters to make the games more relevant.
Yeah. Right.
You know, there was always the guy, like, I don't think there's been a KOF game that didn't have Terry Bogard in it.
Well, I mean, you know, the Fatal Fury guys are at their core.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Fatal Fury guys, and they got there's two characters they created for the franchise, but now Kyo and Iori, I think their name is.
Yeah, and they've been there since...
They've been there since the beginning.
Since the beginning.
Iori came in the second game, but... Yeah.
But Kyo has been around since the original. One. Yeah, he was like the poster boy for the game and stuff.
Yeah.
But he
was supposed to be the new Terry or the new Ryo from Iron Fighting.
Yeah, but it's an awesome series. It's solid. It's really well put together.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, in the early days, like when Street Fighter 2 was the king of the hill,
yeah.
Fatal Fury was always kind of the runner-up. Fatal Fury was you know, nipping at its heels.
Well, when everyone else was desperately trying to figure out what it was about Street Fighter 2 that was capturing the hearts and minds of gamers.
It was the arcades,
right? Yeah. What it was doing. Fatal Fury was... SNK was the company that did it.
Yeah. Yeah,
then managed to pull it off.
Yeah, it was to strengthen the character, and that was something that the SNK series, like, and I mean, yeah, when you got so many characters coming at you, it's hard to kind of get an attachment to them.
Yeah,
but like some of those characters are pretty endearing characters, like the Fatal Fury guys.
I still have somewhere in a cardboard box. I have a pre-order item for one of the King of Fighters games from years ago. I have Terry Bogard's hat.
Oh, cool.
That's why I forget what it says. I think Lone Wolf or something.
Yeah, I don't even remember. But I mean, like. Do you even know who we're talking about, Kev? Do you know the characters?
Are these the guys from Fatal... that big guy? No. I don't know. I've never played the King of Fighter games.
No? Okay.
I was always a Street Fighter.
Okay. Well, yeah, fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, if...
And Virtua Fighter.
Virtua Fighter. Well, I don't know. I can't say anything. Virtua Fighter 4, absolutely mind-blowingly amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. But, you know...
The one with the Shaolin Monk in it. The first PSK one. Yeah, that was really good.
That was, like, just one of the most technical... beautifully polished fighters I'd ever seen.
Then
Tekken 5. Oh, Tekken 5. But yeah, anyway, you know, Fatal or King of Fighters 13 is, you know, like, it's not one of those games that, it's not like Street Fighter 4 or like Mortal Kombat where you say, oh, the fighting game is back and, you know, the triumphant return of fighting games to the mainstream. No, it's not that.
No.
But if you're a fan of fighting games, it's definitely worth picking up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Definitely.
I will have one thing to say about it. Guys, the androgynous last bosses are not doing it for me. Okay, I'm not saying every SNK fighting game has to have Geese Howard as the last boss.
But every SNK fighting game should have Geese Howard.
Yeah, you know, Street Fighter's got its M. Bison, Mortal Kombat's got its...
Street Fighter only had M. Bison in 2.
Only 2, sorry.
Street Fighter's last bosses have been shit since Street Fighter 3, too.
Street Fighter 4, technically the last boss, should have been either Gouken or Akuma.
Yeah.
Akuma should be the last boss.
I agree.
He's pretty odd. But, you know, you gotta ask yourself, what's more formidable, you know, an androgynous fashion model who fills the screen with cheap super moves, or a near 7 foot tall karate man...
With a deep, gravelly voice.
With a deep, gravelly voice, who tells you at the beginning of every round that he's going to stain his fist with your blood.
Yeah. See, there you go.
That's pretty intimidating.
It is. He's very intimidating. He's an awesome character.
He's a monster.
Yeah. He looked like, you know, like a Miami surf bum in a karate gi.
No, dude, it was Dolph Lundgren as a businessman.
Yeah, well, there you go.
He had his samurai hakama on.
Yeah.
And that's what he used to wear.
But he always had that bronze tan, you know? He looked like he should have a golden rope chain or something on.
Well, sure, yes, no, because he used to throw off the white shirt on top, wasn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah.
He looked like if Dolph Lundgren played... Heihachi in the Tekken movie.
That'd be Howard.
So what was your third game?
My third game, and this was just out of sheer interest after Kevin brought up the demo last time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I sat down and I spent a couple hours with Rayman Origins.
Great.
Yeah, I know, I gotta say, Kevin, you know, I respectfully disagree.
No, you know, I only played the demo, and to be fair, I can't really give
Rayman,
a yes or no on a demo.
Rayman Origins does 4 things properly that make a great platforming game. All right, clever level design, good gaming physics, controls that reflect those controls that, you know, let you take advantage of those gaming physics.
Like Little Big Planet.
Like Little Big Planet. Mm-hmm. Or, okay. like the better Mario games, right?
Okay.
And Challenge.
Right.
Right? The game starts out, it's really, really easy to pick up. It is absolutely merciless to try to finish and crack wide open.
So like Donkey Kong Country Returns on the Wii.
Yeah. Just gotcha. that sort of good platformer that, I mean, a guy like you can sit down, play for 20 minutes, have a great time with, and not go back, you know, never consider again. But it's still there on the shelf if you ever want to play it.
Yeah.
Or if you're the sort of guy who wants to spend 10 hours playing a platformer, you'll be perfectly happy with it.
See, I just freaking hate Rayman.
Yeah.
So, I hate the character. Yeah. I think he's stupid.
You're not going
to. And Michel Ancel is one of the most overrated game designers in the business for me. So, I'm not going to hate on Beyond Good and Evil. I consider that to be a fluke.
Yeah.
Honestly, but like, I mean, the Rayman stuff, you know, Rayman, Hoodlum, Havoc, and...
Was he involved in all of them?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, well, not
no,
the
somebody told
stuff.
Me this is his first time with the series in 10 years.
Well, yeah, Hoodlum Havoc was about a PS1 game, wasn't it?
Dreamcast, right? Yeah, it was about 10 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. So there you go.
There you go. So all the Rabbids stuff and everything he stayed away from.
Yeah, but are the Rabbids in this game?
No.
I'll never play it. Okay. They are hilarious. I don't give a shit what
they are pretty says. Funny.
They are hilarious. That trailer for the Xbox One where they stick the toilet brush in the guy's nose.
Oh, yeah.
It's awesome.
You know what? I would like to see the return of Cool Spot.
No!
Speaking of 2D platformers. That's right.
That was his gimmick. He snapped his fingers.
He snapped his fingers, man. That was a good game.
No!
That was a good game.
No! I want to go back to Taco King Fighters again.
Yeah, no, see, I'll probably never play it because it's Rayman, but...
You should still play Donkey Kong Country Returns.
I did play
Donkey Kong Returns. I swear to God, you should play more of it.
I'm on, like, World 3 in that game.
Dude, there's, like, 8 of them.
Yeah, but it's her, John.
If you think World 3 is hard?
I'm not a huge platformer guy anyway, so you know. And that means...
I think I do it
that means
spite.
Switching over my video input on my TV and having to turn the Wii
on. I get to these levels in these platform games where, you know, you all of a sudden you come up against a wall and you can't finish it. That's not a deterrent to me. That's the game slapping me in the face.
I will not stand for that. I'd never complain about
When somebody slaps
you
in the face, you have a gunfight.
Yeah. You know, I don't really complain about challenging platformers. No. I actually prefer to have a challenging
platformer. It should be there, man. Like, yeah. This to me is... That's why I like... the same reason I like Donkey Kong Country Returns so much last year. After playing... I really don't want to swear. After playing goddamn Kirby and reviewing it... just playing something that feels like an old NES or Super Nintendo, that level of challenge, right? That thing that we're not going to hold your hand.
See, my problem with Rayman is...
The character design is stupid.
There's no character.
No.
It's not even a character design. There's no character. It's like
Bubsy.
Yeah, or Dizzy, or one of these crappy, you know, Mario rip-off mascots. It's just... I mean, I know everybody raved about Rayman on, what was it, Saturn? When it first came out on Saturn, everybody went crazy over it.
The graphics were unbelievable.
And it was, you know, it was the Saturn's answer to Crash Bandicoot and Mario 64. You know, and
it was on a PlayStation, though.
It was on PlayStation, though, but the PlayStation version apparently was gimped or something, I don't know. But, you know, it's just, it's one of those things where I never understood the appeal of the character. I there's nothing there. He's a blank slate.
Yeah.
And with a platformer, you need character. You got to have, like, with Donkey Kong Country, you got Donkey Kong. With Mario, you've got Mario.
Well, I mean, remember how hard we were laughing at the beginning of Donkey Kong Country when the thing tried to hypnotize? It's like, Donkey Kong's too stupid.
Yeah, and you just see him go flying, you know? Like, but there was character there. There was humor there. With Rayman, I just see weirdness.
Yeah.
I see a weird red treasure chest with an eyeball. I see some big blue, looks like a Jell-O pudding, you know? And I'm just like, this is just too freaking weird.
But on the other hand, it plays beautifully.
I'm sure it does, but so does Little Big Planet. I'll just go play that.
Exactly.
And Sackboy is goddamn adorable. I can have fun just having him make faces for half an hour and I'm entertained.
It's true, actually.
And like, if you play two-player, just slapping each other. It's hilarious. Yeah. It's awesome.
That's why Cool Spotted personality. The man wore, or
you
spot,
mean,
I should say.
Put him out of his
he wore sunglasses.
He was too pretentious.
No.
He thought too highly of himself.
He was cool. He was like,
exactly.
Snoopy.
Kevin is wearing a pair of picture glasses and a scarf.
Remember Snoopy dressed up as Joe Cool? I always wanted Lucy to come along and just bash him with that wit line of
his
scale.
Oh, no.
I really did. The best Joe Cool strips was when, like, one of the other characters got one up on Snoopy while he was Joe Cool, and he ended up like in the dirt with his glasses hanging off, you know? Stupid bastards. I'm sorry, John. I didn't mean to derail your rain.
That's fine. No, that's cool. I'm thinking about King of Fighters again.
Oh, okay. I did play one other game this week. I did put the finishing touches on Uncharted 3.
Right.
And I don't really want to get into it, but I got to. I feel obligated that I should.
All right, let's hear
Especially after how much we raved.
Yeah. The first half of the game is freaking brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely freaking brilliant. One of the greatest action-adventure games I've ever played. The second half of the game does not live up to that promise whatsoever. Not even remotely. The second half of the game is gunfight, 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 gunfight.
And jumping around from locations that don't make any sense.
Yeah, like, well, there's one... I mean, there was a lot of stuff made, a lot of big deal. You saw this level if you watched the debut of it on Jimmy Fallon. You saw the cruise ship level. There's that level and a level immediately before that that should not be in the game. Should not. No right. way. They're excellent. Great design, you know. The first part, actually the part not in the cruise ship, was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Did not fit in the game at all. Just, it totally sidetracks the narrative. Completely.
What am I doing in Mogadishu?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like watching Apocalypse Now redo and having to get to that 45-minute long plantation sequence.
Yeah.
You know, like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
It was just so... It left such a horrible taste in my mouth.
Yeah.
And the game cheats like a son of a bitch. There is one section where they basically give you the illusion of choice. You're infiltrating an airfield. And, I mean, everybody's seen the airplane sequence. That's not a spoiler, you know. Yeah. The airfield before that. It's a pretty cool level. I'd be cool with it being an action level. I'd be A-okay with it being a gunfight level. I'm fine with that. However, they give you a silenced pistol and guys with flashlights who you can avoid. You can take out using stealth kills or the silenced pistol. The first time through, you know, I killed one or two guys. I got spotted. It turned into firefight. Firefight consisted of about four waves of guys. It felt like I was playing Gears of War on Horde mode online. You know, first it was three regulars. Then it was three guys with shotguns. Then you see three guys climb up on storage containers, break out sniper rifles. Then it was two heavily armored guys with shotguns. And, like, it just come wave after wave after
Sounds
wave.
Like enslaved.
Yeah. There you go. And it was just
Wolverine.
So goddamn frustrating. Because the second time through, I stealthed everybody. I didn't see a single person left standing, and I was pretty goddamn full.
That's not a knock on Horde mode, by the way, guys. It's just...
It's a single-player game.
Yeah.
You know, it's single-player.
Yeah, Horde mode, that the fun comes from that structure.
And I think this is the biggest thing. The big thing with me was it felt like stuff you would experience in second-tier third-person shooters.
Yeah.
Stuff like Mind Jack, or stuff like Dead to Rights Retribution, or, you know, any number of cover-based third-person shooters. And a lot of these games are good. A lot of these games I enjoy. But this is Uncharted.
Right.
This is freaking Uncharted I'm playing here. You know, like, it just shouldn't be.
You still got Chapter 2 in your eyes.
Oh, Chapter 2 is amazing. Yeah. Amazing. And it was, you know, like, I got to that point. I stealth-killed every single bastard I could see. There was no one there. I get to where it is that I'm supposed to go to advance the level. We've been spotted! And I have to fight every freaking one of them.
Oh,
again.
You're kidding.
Yeah, I have to fight every one of them. It's like, no matter how you undertake it, this illusion of stealth is exactly that. An illusion.
Right.
You're just as well to start shooting and gun your way through it.
Yeah.
Because either way, it's a gunfight.
Right.
You can't do anything about it.
Wow.
And there was also a spot like it on the cruise ship, and it made the same freaking... It went one further than that. Guys were just appearing out of nowhere. They were materializing.
Monster generators?
Yeah, they were materializing out of the ether and coming from behind me when I'd cleared that part of the level out already.
Right, right.
You know, and it was pissing me off to no end. I was playing, and Brian, who had finished it the day before, was talking about how awesome the end of the game was and all this kind of stuff. I was sending them text messages saying, like, Brian, Uncharted is really pissing me off right now. I'm going to take this disc out and I'm going to snap it in half.
Wow.
And that series should not make me feel that way.
Yeah.
Uncharted 1 and 2, never. And no matter how many problems I had with the gunfights on the end of Uncharted 2, how I felt it should have went on, like, that was a minor pacing issue.
Yeah.
That wasn't something that angered me or frustrated me or knocked the game down for me. With Uncharted 3, I wanted to destroy. I wanted to physically wreck that freaking disc. And that should not happen in that series. It should not happen. And it had nothing to do with difficulty or challenge or anything like that. You know, you persevere, you get through it, fine. But the shit just totally derails the game. It totally sidetracks what you're doing.
Yeah. No, that illusion of stealthing, man, that is a sloppy game design that you do not expect from Naughty Dog.
No, exactly. Yeah. And, I mean, the game is beautiful. The game is gorgeous. The first half of the game is exquisitely well written. You know, but this is the other thing. And, I mean, this is minor spoiler territory. It's not really, like, I'm not giving away storyline elements. But I will tell you this. It never capitalizes on what it sets up in the first half.
Right.
Nothing is ever capitalized upon. In the end, you know, the second half of the game is some ups, some downs, some really awesome shit, and then an ending that feels exactly like the ending to the first two. There's no finality. There's no, you know, like, anyway, good job, guys. On to the next Nathan Drake adventure. You know, like, it's just, you know, business as usual, I guess. And they set up big character moments that just don't happen. And also weakest villains of the series.
Yeah.
The villains have no identity whatsoever.
And that's really sad, man, because I was getting really, really excited about the Queen.
Marlowe?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, she's just...
She's Helen Mirren is the bad guy? I was really
excited. Yeah, and you know, like, there's a one-off sentence, if you've played to Syria, you've already heard it.
Yeah.
Where Cutter drops a line about all the secret societies throughout history and blah, 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 over the last 400 years and how they're all the one group and it's these guys. And it's like... It's dropped so nonchalantly and so, you know, without any impact or effect that you just, like, you forget about it.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's the only information you ever get on these guys.
Yeah.
Why do I hate them so much? Why are they so evil? Why is Talbot so absolutely royally pissed off when Marlowe makes her exit? Why are all these guys willing to rush into burning buildings and sinking ships and, you know, flaming villas for this woman? Like, what is the deal? It's never explained, it's never, you know, and even... At, like,
yeah, they don't even go the route, like, in Uncharted 2, it's pretty much explained for you right away. Lazarevich is a very, very, very scary man.
Yes, well, I mean, you know, they tell you flat out, he's a warlord.
These guys are terrifying.
He runs a private mercenary army that goes into Tibet for the Chinese, and while he's there, he indulges his own personal passion in collecting artifacts.
Yeah.
So you know what's going on with the guy. You know how he rolls.
And he has a personal reason for finding what he's looking for.
Exactly.
Without giving away anything.
Yeah, exactly. But with Marlowe, I mean, yes, it's supposed to be personal. This is this whole, you know, this vision quest that Nathan Drake has been on since he was 12 years old, you know, finding the ring and the little puzzle box gizmo and... She was after it too, and I mean, and this is the other thing.
Was my theory about the saint right?
What's that?
The whole he calls himself Simon Templar, you know, the obsessed with the adventures of the.
They never capitalize on that. They never capitalize on that at all.
Crappy.
Never. It never comes into being at all.
Okay.
It's dropped briefly by her at the scene in Syria, which you saw, didn't you?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, and that's it. After that, there's no more character beats in the entire game.
So it pretty much ends with the foot chase with Talbot.
Yeah, that's the last time you get any character development. Which sucks. Which really, really sucks. Because even that, like, hints at bigger things to come.
Dude, like,
you know?
The end of that scene when she's had her little say at the table and
she warns him about Sullivan and, you know, like this stuff is...
And
it's cool!
Talbot makes the mistake of a lifetime of making eye contact with Drake.
Yeah.
You just see the flash of utter hatred
malice
in Drake's face for a second.
Yeah, but, like, none of that stuff gets capitalized on. It's just... Yeah, I hated Talbot by the end of the game, but I didn't know why. I just hated him because of, the, like, what happened in the game kind of thing, you know? Because that foot chase in Syria, like, he just eludes you by that little bit.
Yeah.
And that's what makes you hate him. But by the end of the game, it's like, I really had no...
It wasn't like Flynn in the second game. Flynn in the second game was, and I know it's really cheesy, you know, you do the whole dichotomy light and dark thing, but Flynn in the second game to me was Drake, but only without the personal strength to overcome those flaws.
He was evil Drake.
He wasn't as smart as Drake, he wasn't as resourceful as Drake, and he didn't have the personal integrity to better himself.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, did he have a goatee?
Yes, he did.
There you go. See.
No, Harry Flynn had the... He just had... He had 5 o'clock shadow.
Okay.
And
Stolen, sorry,
he had,
sorry,
and he had too bad. He looked like... It's Talbot. Someone looks like Gavin Rossdale.
Yeah, Talbot does look like Gavin Rossdale.
Yeah. The first time I saw him, that's all I could think about was... dude from Constantine.
Yeah, well, I mean, like Marlowe makes her big exit, and Talbot is just like, no! You know, like, it's like some...
Relic.
Yeah. Oh! He just, I don't know, for some reason, he freaks out, and... Like, you know, they kind of drop hints throughout the game that she might actually be a descendant of Francis Drake.
Yeah.
Or she might be even a descendant of the Bolians and stuff like this. You know, like, she could be a direct descendant of Queen Elizabeth. And, you know, like, one of the theories kicking around on the internet, which I thought was freaking brilliant, was she was a love child of Drake and Elizabeth. Or like, an ancestor, like, a descendant of Drake and Elizabeth's love child and stuff. Like that stuff was awesome. Mm. But nothing ever comes of it. You know, there is no emotional character payoff whatsoever. Now, the ending is great. It's got a great, you know, typical Uncharted Indiana Jones-ish ending. And the last sequence is just pure spectacle. It's a jaw-dropping spectacle.
And are you still looking forward to Golden Abyss?
I'm still looking forward to Golden Abyss, yeah. Because, I mean, it is still an Uncharted game. As long as they get that balance of action-adventure and shooting right,
yeah.
You know, which Uncharted 1 and 2 did in spades. You know, like, Uncharted 3, at times I felt like I was playing a shooter.
I was talking about it, they had shuffled a few of the chapters around.
Yeah.
Did a little more story thing, like, took out the stuff on the pirate ship.
It could have been a pre-credit sequence.
I think it should have been a pre-credit sequence.
Pirate ship? I gotta play this game.
It's not a pirate, it's modern pirates.
It's
you know, like,
oh, I see, yeah.
It's the cruise
like
ship.
Like, you're in unprotected waters.
Yeah. No, but the scenes in that, yeah. I mean, should have been, like, the beginning with the Cross of Coronado in Last Crusade.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you had your... Then you caught the London, and then, you know, the absolutely goddamn brilliant Chapter 2 should have been, like, Chapter 5 or 6.
Yeah.
You know, and just shuffle...
You should have gotten, like, all of the Rubal Kali stuff, like, when you do hit the desert, all the marketing for the game, when you hit that stuff, from there on, the game is excellent.
Yeah.
It is fantastic. However... It just happens too late.
Yeah. That should be chapter 16.
You're on, like, chapter 20 when the desert stuff hits.
Really?
And it's over at 23.
Wow.
You know, so it's like...
It was supposed to be the desert Uncharted game.
Yeah, and it's not. It really isn't.
In Uncharted 2, all the stuff with Tibet and the train and everything, you're at that before you're at the halfway point.
Yep.
You're at the stuff, all the stuff they advertise, you're like, I'm not even halfway through the game. Holy shit, what else do they have to show me?
Yeah, I mean, and there's some great stuff. There is some really, really good, you know, stuff, but it just doesn't connect like 1 or 2 did.
News?
Let's do the news.
News!
Hooray,
that's
news.
What we've been playing for the week, though, Gus.
Yeah.
I think it was a good conversation, actually.
Okay, so, first off, let's get some Skyrim out of the way.
Okay.
Keen-eyed PC modders have discovered a mysterious gateway in Southern Skyrim. That one probably properly hacksword leads to low-fi versions of Cyrodiil, province featured in Oblivion, and the province of Morrowind. Heads explode! I couldn't believe when I heard that. Bethesda has said nothing, but speculation leads either to a DLC or expansion-fueled return to places long past, or perhaps some placeholder geometry for modders to build a classic Elder Scrolls setting seamlessly into Skyrim.
Either or would be pretty awesome.
Yeah.
But I would love to see, you know, DLC, you know, like in okay, you know, maybe over Christmas trailer comes out this January, Return to Cyrodiil, or Return to Morrowind, you know?
Oh my God.
And then 6 months after that, you know, Return to Cyrodiil, you know, like the Return to Oblivion. That kind of shit would be awesome. I mean, I got realistic expectations. I don't expect them to recreate Morrowind and Oblivion.
It'd be far too big.
Yeah.
To do that completely. Yeah.
I mean, you're looking at another 2 years worth of game development.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it's as simple as just plugging in high res art assets and stuff and going from there, you know.
Wouldn't it be an awesome MMO?
It would be an amazing MMO.
Yeah.
It would be an amazing
MMO. Dirty words. You shut your mouth.
If they kept the gameplay intact.
Yeah, if it was exactly the way it is, but just multiplayer.
And I don't think with a massive amount of players, they could... I just don't think the internet infrastructure is there for that.
Right.
Because it's too... Like, I mean, with World of Warcraft or Age of Conan and all of that stuff, the interface is a bit more slower paced.
Right.
I could see them turning it into, like, Guild Wars or one of those where you got instanced areas, you know, where you come into, like, a hub city and there's hundreds of players around.
Right.
You form your group. And then when you leave the city, you're in your own instance with, like, say, 8 other players or something
right.
I could see it working that way really well.
Yeah. That would actually be awesome. I would have loved to go around Skyrim with a small party.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be cool?
That would be pretty badass.
Well, we'd have to make Redguard so, because the 13th Warrior cannot be a Northman.
The other the other thing about it, too, is, I mean, well, I guess the timeline is the obvious thing.
Yeah.
Skyrim is 200 years after Oblivion.
That's right.
So, I mean, it had to be, it couldn't be Cyrodiil as you saw it in Oblivion.
No,
it couldn't be Morrowind as you saw it in Morrowind.
Cyrodiil under the heel of the elves.
Yeah. I mean, certain things would be the same, obviously, because every time you're in Whiterun, you hear that guy say, have you visited the Cloud District? So, obviously, the Cloud District is still there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
Is that the Doomsayer?
No, it's just
some random guy.
the priest of Talos.
Yeah,
he's cool.
He's pretty cool. But yeah, I know they say that the White Tower is clearly visible and the Red Mountain from Morrowind is clearly visible.
Right, right.
So I'm excited.
Yeah,
I really hope it's, if not DLC, I'd actually kind of like to see full fledged expansions like what they did with Shivering Isles.
That would be amazing.
That would be phenomenal.
I mean, if they could eventually, with all these, do those as expansions.
Yeah.
And then start adding other provinces as expansions.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be unbelievable.
And I mean, I look at the PC modding community and more Oblivion, which adds Morrowind to Oblivion.
Right, right.
And people are eating that shit up.
Yep.
And the guys at Bethesda, like Todd Howard and his boys, they're not stupid. They know all this shit's going on.
Yeah.
So they got to see the appeal. They've got to see that people want it.
You know what else is really interesting about it? They know the shit's going on. You never hear about cease and desist letters.
Well, no, that's not their style anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
They fully embrace the modding community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they build hooks into the game for modders. Then give out the dev kit, that the same dev kit that the developers use to build the worlds gets released for free to the modding community. So, you know, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I played around with the Fallout construction kit a while ago.
Oh, cool.
And it was... it was actually amazing.
Who knows, man? Who knows? Maybe someday some modder might be working for Bethesda.
Well, I'm sure that's the case now.
Yeah.
But, you know, playing around with the Fallout one, I was amazed at how user-friendly it was. It was too time-consuming for me.
Right.
But, you know, really user-friendly. So, either way, I'm looking forward to see what happens with it. In other Skyrim news, Bethesda promises a patch within the next week. I believe it's all three platforms.
Okay.
I think all three are getting it. To address several issues... The most prominent is the save lag issue affecting PS3 players, where the game's frames per second drops to single digits after your save file reaches a certain size. I think they say it's about 6 megs.
Wow.
So, you know, they say 20 to 30 hours to around that point. Basically, the frame rate turns to mud.
Okay.
I know at least one person, two people, who've been affected by it. And, Dan, his game is unplayable.
Wow.
He's actually stopped playing it. He's gone back to Dark Souls.
That hasn't happened to me yet. I'm 25 hours in, but, you know, fingers crossed.
And apparently it's like, the variables that it's dependent on, it goes by your save file size is the basic root issue. But apparently variables depend on, whether you left doors open in certain places, whether you dropped items in the environment. Because everything that drops stays.
And adds to your...
Boys and girls, when you were little growing up and your mother told you to close the door behind you...
Yeah. She was worried about your frames per second dropping into the single digits.
Yeah. Your mother knew you were Dragonborn.
So, yeah, help is coming. They say sometime after Thanksgiving weekend, which is right now.
Yanksgiving.
Yeah, Yanksgiving weekend. So, which is right now. So you guys, early next week, you should be getting, or within the next few days, I guess, by the time you hear this, you should be getting your fix.
Good news.
Very good news.
In news that has absolutely nothing to do with Vikings or dragons.
Aww.
They've announced the Jak and Daxter HD collection coming to PS3 in February of 2012.
Yay.
Woo. You know, speaking of Naughty Dog and Amy Hennig and awesomeness, and careful not to step in any dark ego.
I never played these games, so I'm really looking forward to.
The first game was, you know, that whole. It was really what we call the last of the Mario 64 style platformers.
The last of the original 3D platformers.
The formula was perfected.
Yeah,
it was absolutely flawless.
I know some people complained about length at the time because it was less than it was one of the first platformers to really be less than 10 hours kind of thing.
Oh, boo-hoo.
Cry
me a river.
Yeah.
Because also on that disc, after you're crying because Jak and Daxter was so short, you've got the epic in scope Jak 2 and 3.
Yeah.
And I believe these are the games when Ms. Amy Hennig came on board.
Started writing with 2.
And that's all of a sudden, you know, when your cute little cartoon elf game turns into Pirates of Darkwater. it becomes kind of dark fantasy.
They were characters, awesome games.
Characters die and
Yeah.
You still got your comic relief, but...
And instead of, like, using your pet meerkat as a... or whatever he was, as a weapon,
yeah.
You start carrying Gatling guns.
Start carrying Gatling guns. And, man, Jack put on some serious muscle for that second game, dude. He was huge.
He was also angry. He had a voice.
Yeah.
And it was an angry voice.
Was it?
Yeah.
It kind of calmed down a little bit in the third, although he wasn't raspy sounding.
He wasn't Batman.
No.
No, it was more like he was yelling all the time.
Yeah. It kind of got better in the third.
Yeah.
Okay. I can't wait to play these games.
They were awesome games. They were like, I mean, in terms of bright spots on PlayStation 2, there were so many, but this is definitely one of them.
Great. South Korea has enacted the Cinderella Law, which prohibits online gaming to anyone under the age of 16 between the hours of midnight and 6 a.m. Good idea, bad idea, maybe it should be everybody, judging by the stories of babies starving to death and whatnot. I don't think the 16-year-olds are the problem.
I agree.
Yeah.
Hey, it's I the wrote parents.
So, you wrote it. You wrote it.
Protocol Cinderella will commence in 10 hours.
But I mean, everybody's heard this. Like, it's practically become urban legend or folklore at this point. Of
gamers, you know, dying,
the Korean parents so enamored with a StarCraft II tournament that their kids starve to death in their cribs. And,
yeah,
you know,
even so, gamers themselves dying
at their keyboard.
Yeah, playing World of Warcraft. You know, like,
are you?
It's not the game. It can't be the game that's the problem in that case. It's the personality. Something in the personality of the person. It could be anything. It could not be a video game. It could be they're so obsessed with a book, or they could be so obsessed with a movie marathon thing that...
Dude, I've had books that I can't put down. I've been to one or two movie marathons. When you gotta go to the bathroom, you go to the bathroom.
I think it's the society in general, and the fact that, like, okay, North America, we've been gaming since the 70s.
Yeah.
You know, like, Europe, North America had arcades, Atari, Nintendo, you know, we had all of this shit. Over here, over in Asia, like, in some of these, like, Pacific Rim countries, obviously not Japan, but, like, areas like China and places like, I mean, they were traditionally closed off to any kind of Western influence and all of that kind of stuff. It's only within the last, you know, 15, maybe 16 years, like, even 20 years being generous, that, like, even PC games have started to filter in there.
Mm-hmm.
And MMOs over there are just such a huge, huge thing compared to, like, okay, we've got, you know, three huge MMOs. We got, like, Age of Conan. We got World of Warcraft, and then everything else, which might be 5 or 10 titles that are regularly active. But over there, they've got hundreds.
Yeah.
You know, there's golf MMOs. There's, you know, you name it. It's over there, you know, like, just that whole...
I'm going to say something horrible here, and everyone's going to think I'm a fascist for it, and...
Oh, boy.
I kind of agree with it.
Yeah, really,
you agree with it?
Yep. I kind of do.
I agree with the fact that
if parents
under
are
16 shouldn't be playing games from midnight to 6 a.m. I agree with that.
No.
I don't agree that the government...
Is mandating it
and saying, you can't do this. Right? I think it should be up to the parents, and... To regulate your own kids. I mean, how is the government going to regulate this?
Shut off the tap. Internet tap.
turn off the internet.
Kill the interwebs.
Oh, man, they'd have
one of those... Shut it down.
They'd have one of those giant levers. You'd turn on...
Like they used to use in Louisiana in the 1930s to fry people. But yeah, no, it's kind of a... It's a murky situation. And, you know, it's easy for us to kind of imprint our culture and our upbringing and stuff on it, but it's a different culture, it's a different society.
Yeah.
And if it's something that the government feels that is needed, then, by all means, if addiction is that much... Well, I mean, hell, when StarCraft came out in Korea, it actually affected the country's economy.
Yeah.
You know, it boosted... Like, StarCraft to South Korea was what call centers were to Newfoundland, you know?
Yeah.
You remember the Dragon Quest law? Now nobody's can actually tell me if it actually exists.
Apparently it is true, yeah. In Japan, they're only allowed to release AAA products, like stuff deemed popular video games, on Sundays.
Wow.
Because too many people used to take the day off work and the whole entire country would have to shut down.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, like, whether it's true or not, like, I mean, this is the thing. I think that if addiction levels have reached that level where people
critical
are
mass.
Dying,
then you gotta do something.
Maybe they should be stepping in.
Yeah.
In our, what is, you know, probably our weekly bit of PS Vita news. We've been talking a lot about
it. It's a gadget.
It's a gadget. The PSV. This excites me greatly. Will be compatible with the PS3's remote play feature. A future firmware update will allow Vita gamers or Vita gamers to play their PS3 games on Sony's new Wunderkind via streaming.
Wunderkind!
Overkind?
Holy shit. Portable Skyrim. See, like, as long as your save file isn't over 6 megs.
Yeah.
Then it might get a little laggy.
Yeah.
But, man, like, just...
That scares me, man, because you'd miss your bus stop 6 times. You'd just be on the bus all day.
would be on the bus
all day. I've used the feature with the PSP on PlayStation 3 a few times.
Right.
And there were only 2 PS3 games that actually supported it. There was Lair, and BlazBlue, whatever, you know? And Lair was surprisingly fun, because it was you had the patch to get rid of the motion controls. So, like, you know, it was... The novelty was, like, holy shit, I'm playing a PS3 game on my PSP over a wireless internet connection. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know, I was down at work playing Lair on my PS3 from my PS3 at home. You know, like, on my little PlayStation Portal.
Wow.
Which is kind of neat. And, like, the ability to do that with every PS3 game in your library, you know, you're going camping for the weekend, you want to marathon some Skyrim, stick the disc in your drive, turn off your system, leave remote play enabled, log in from a wireless internet source. Hey, I've got tethering on my cell phone. Bang! Log in. Off you go.
Watch your cell phone go skyrocket.
Well, I mean, it is done through streaming, so yeah, there's going to be data transfer.
Yeah.
But it's basically, you know, it's the same kind of thing that, like, OnLive is using with that whole, you know, using these dedicated PCs to run the machines and then using streaming to this little box on your TV. Same principle.
Right.
Same tech, basically, you know? Well, I'm sure there'll be a little...
One more than Galactic Empire.
Yeah. I'm sure there'll be a little bit of lag, but man... PS3 games on a portable system.
That's pretty cool.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, now this one hits a little bit close to home.
Yeah, this is for us, or for you Canuckistans who are listening.
Yeah. Canadian EB game stores, read GameStop, are merging their new and used sales shelves. Used games will now be nigh indistinguishable to new product. And some reports indicate that used titles are to be stocked on the shelves in front of the new copies. New copies are to be buried at the back. And customers now seem like they're going to get boned by paying $2 to $5 less than new price for a used title that doesn't include an online pass. In other news, The Ring is trying to get back to its master, Frodo. It wants to be found.
Oh my god.
Okay, listen. All joking aside, this has gone beyond simple corporate greed, and they've now stepped into cartoonish supervillain.
It's
terrible.
It is deplorable.
This is evil.
It is. This is EB giving a huge wiggly finger to software developers.
This is like, okay, I'm gonna apologize to Mike and Melissa. This is dick across the face.
Oh! And,
you know, I worked at an EB before, and, you know, I found it personally objectionable when the district manager came down and told us we had to open every copy of Kingdom Hearts 2 that came in, just so the wall could have more copies. We'd stick the instruction manual in the front of an old game case, just so the wall could have more copies on it. I said, well, somebody's buying a new product that's been opened. No, the game hasn't been played, but... You're buying a new product that's
been opened.
I don't buy a loaf of bread at the store
that's been opened.
That's been opened.
Well, we just wanted you to smell the bread.
Oh, God.
Yeah. You know, I don't... I found that objectionable.
Okay, I'm sure everybody's got an EB story.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's got them. They're
Dude, I lived EB stories.
They're goddamn corporate scumbags.
Yeah.
And this just proves it that much further. I mean, like, this is... I hear shit like this, and it enrages me. This is why I'm behind. Like, everybody bitches and moans about this online passing. Everybody I know is like, oh, online pass. You know, they get all whiny. And come, what if I want to buy the game used? If you want to buy the game used, go the frig ahead and buy the game used. But if EA or Sony or Bethesda or BioWare or Activision or Microsoft wants to make an extra dollar on a used product that they wouldn't make a single dime from, more power to them.
Yeah.
You know, if that's the only way that software companies can recoup costs on a used product, so effing be it.
And I just think a lot of gamers out there, either they don't understand or they just don't care to understand that when you buy a used product, developer's not getting anything for it.
Not a dime. Right. Not a single dime.
Now, this is something, like...
I think it's bad enough. I think it's
just,
like...
I'm just wondering, when is it going to hit a point that one of the big boys in the industry, an Activision or an EA or one of the big, huge publishers, looks at EB and says, no.
No.
You're not getting this new Call of Duty game.
Yeah.
We'll sell it at Walmart.
Yeah, you know, because we're talking, like, I mean, and we're not even talking about EA Worldwide or EB Worldwide. We're talking about EB Canada.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, what is EB Canada to someone like Microsoft? Or to someone like Sony?
Yeah. You know, what's like, to say that EA says next year when Mass Effect 3 comes out? Right? Yeah.
Hey, guess what, EB? Because of your policy on new versus used sales, we're shipping all our copies to major accounts, which means Walmart, Future Shop, Best Buy.
Yeah.
You know what? You guys are going to have to wait a month to get your copies.
Yeah.
But then EB will turn around and say, well, we're boycotting all EA product. And EA's stock will plummet. And, you know, like, they're bullies.
Yeah.
They're the games industry bully. The guys made $6 billion last year.
Yeah.
They made more money than any other software company in existence. Like, forget Activision or EA. They made, what, three times as much as what Activision made last year. And Activision were the biggest profiteer in the games industry last year.
Yeah, well, Activision are the 400-pound gorilla.
Yeah, you know, and EB made three times what they made.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous. It's absolutely retarded. And now what they're doing is they know where the bottom line is. They know the money's in used sales.
If you listen to our podcast, Bobby Kotick, and you don't already hate my guts, send us an email. I really want to know what you think about this.
Yes, like, I would actually, you know...
I would love to sit down and talk with him about
We've done our fair share of Activision bashing in the past, but even Activision should not have to suffer this indignity.
Yeah.
No,
this is bullshit of the highest caliber is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And not only are software companies getting boned, but gamers are getting boned.
Yeah. That's right.
You know?
Now listen, I bought a used game here and there. Now, I mean, when stuff comes out new, you know, within the first couple months of being out there, and especially when you're going to EB and you're talking about a difference of a couple bucks...
Dude, I have seen used product retail for the same price as new. In some admittedly extremely rare cases, I've seen new games retail for $19.99 while used games retail for $24 or $29.99. It's ridiculous. And, okay, what they're going to do is they're going to take a used copy that costs more than a new copy and stick it in front of it?
Yeah.
Just so they can get their bottom line, so they can make another $6 billion next year?
Now, what did we say about it? You could you can tell the difference, apparently, on the back of the case.
Yes, important safety tip. Anybody who walks into one of their local EB stores and sees that all the used and new games have been merged, pick up the game case, look in the bottom corner where your UPC would normally be. They always stick their own little POS, which means point-of-sale sticker, over the UPC code. New or used will be printed on that sticker in really big, nice, bold text. So take a look.
Pick it up. That's if you feel like walking into your...
Yeah, right now I wouldn't walk into an EB store to save my life.
No. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, to be a hipster and... Because I realize, you know, if you're walking into a Best Buy or a Walmart or a Future Shop, it's still a big corporate game store.
I'd buy from Walmart 10 times before I'd buy from EB.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At least I know what I'm getting.
Yeah, 10 times now?
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. This week in Minecraft.
Oh, thank God, something lighter.
Minecraft Corner with Kevin. Minecon has come and gone. In fact, last podcast I had the dates wrong. I was a week early. Huh? I'm sure nobody listening to this was depending on the dates that I gave them.
Deadmouth showed up a week early.
Deadmouth showed up a week early. I was like, what? Kevin told me Minecon was this week.
Well, sorry, oh, well, and then he walked out in slow motion while Dubstep played in the background.
That's right, exactly. He took off his big Mickey Mouse hat. Apparently it was a huge success, but fairly disorganized.
It was the first time.
It was the first time.
It was like the first year of PAX.
Yeah, that's right. Minecraft has gone gold. It's out now. It's just called Minecraft. It's not called Minecraft Beta 1.9.
So nothing.
Well, there's a bunch of more crafting in it. Like alchemy stuff, I think, is in there. You can enchant things. There's an end game.
Really?
There is an end game.
Wow.
You can build a portal or find a portal Building it apparently is really difficult, and you usually find them at the bottom of dungeons.
Okay.
And it leads to this place called the End. I can't remember what it's called.
Valhalla.
Anyway, it's a really dark place full of Endermen. Not only Endermen, but the Ender Dragon.
Oh!
And the dragon, I watched the video, a couple of the Yogscast guys went in there to try to fight it. They ended up turning on God mode, and it still took them, like,
8 years.
Ages and ages to kill this dragon. I think Notch just put it in there as this crazy thing to try to beat. And if you do beat him, you actually get, like, a credit roll and everything. As if you beat Minecraft.
Nice!
Right?
That's cool.
You transcend knowledge and become Notch.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So anyway, the game is officially out. It retails, I think it's around $30 or something like that. So if you didn't buy it in beta, you're going to be paying for it. If you want it. Reviews are coming in. They're really great. Eurogamer gave it a 10 out of 10.
Rightfully so.
Yeah, I mean, it's fantastic. It's kind of game-changing for indie games.
And now Eurogamer, they don't throw 10s out lightly.
Oh, no?
No.
Okay.
I love Eurogamer. I love them because they are honest reviewers.
Right,
they never score by hype or whatever. You
okay.
know? I've only seen one other 10 out of 10 in that site's history, and it was Skyrim.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's good. Good for them. So there was a little bit of controversy. I'm just going to touch on it very lightly at Minecon. The Yogscast, if you guys don't know about it, it started as a podcast. Now it's a video podcast. These two British guys do a lot of video game videos on YouTube.
I remember seeing a few.
Yeah. They've been doing a lot of Minecraft stuff. And in fact, they've been really great for promoting the game. They're kind of unofficial ambassadors. And in some cases, they're official ambassadors. They've actually gone to game shows as Minecraft representatives, actually.
Okay.
Which is really great for those guys. Anyway, they went to Minecon. They were invited to be speakers. And their panel was like jam-packed with people. And they showed lots of videos and stuff. Really great guys. Anyway, they're British. They got a certain sense of humor. They like to swear a lot on their videos.
Yeah.
So, after the Minecon, Notch tweeted that there were certain people he wasn't going to work with ever again, because they were difficult to deal with. And he also said that you don't F-bomb kids. And then, so of course, the internet was aflame going, is he talking about the Yogscast?
Yeah.
And then he railed on, actually, about the Yogscast on Twitter, saying how unprofessional they were, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
So they were divas, I believe.
Said they were divas, said that they had scratched out a name, an autograph of Notch's and put fuck you on it. Oh!
Okay,
just dropped an F-bomb.
It's part of the news.
And they did that. And at the time, the guys, Simon and Lewis, were on their way back to the UK, so they weren't able to make a comment on it. They have put up an official statement saying that it was a misunderstanding. They hadn't done that. Notch wasn't even there and didn't even see it. Anyway, this has caused this huge flame war online. And I think it was today, maybe yesterday, Notch actually tweeted that, you know, he was really tired and it was probably a misunderstanding. And then he actually, you know, sent a message to the Yogscast guys saying, sorry for being a dick. I think the moral of the story here is that everybody has the capacity to be a dick.
What I draw from it is he probably heard stories from people very close to him.
Yeah.
About what was going on.
Yeah.
And I think, if nothing else, it shows how much passion he has for what he's brought to the market.
Definitely. Definitely.
You know? And I think his initial response was a knee-jerk response.
Yeah.
But I think it was an honest response.
Yeah.
If these guys were being class grade A douchebags, like, under name of, you know, Minecon, which is him.
Yeah.
You know, like, it'd be easy to say, like, you know, you're talking about World of Warcraft or you're talking about Skyrim or something. I think these are games developed by hundreds of people.
Yeah.
Minecraft is Notch.
That's right.
The two are inseparable.
Yeah.
You know?
The only thing he regretted was the fact that he did it on Twitter. That he made it public.
Yeah.
To talk about them like that.
And I mean, you know, emotions run high, especially when you're close to something.
For sure.
You know?
And the guys were really, the Yogscast guys were really good about it in their official statement. You know, they said about it, you know, probably being a misunderstanding that they weren't there and that they'd actually rehearsed their panel beforehand, and were told that everything was fine. They didn't have to worry about anything like that, right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, Notch himself knows about their sense of humor and what they do, and he was making jokes that were just as insulting during the interview that they had with him.
Right? Yeah.
He was saying things about Simon's mother that I won't repeat on the on our podcast, right? So I think it's blown over now, and I'm hoping that everybody's fine because, you know, it's just a game, right?
Yeah.
It's a game that that is built on community.
And this is what happens when you get a game centered on individuals instead of on companies and stuff like that. You know, this is what happens when you do have a game that was created by a single person and, like, you have a face to put to the game.
Yeah.
This is just what happens. This is always what happens.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah. So that's it. That's this week in Minecraft. I still haven't played the final version of the game because my PC is still on the outs, but I have managed to play the portable Minecraft on an iPad recently, and it is smooth. Now, Notch has said officially that now that the game is out, they're going to start updating the portable versions.
And I guess they're going to kind of try to bring them to parody.
Yeah, and I'm really looking forward to that.
There you go. Looking forward to it. In other PC news, Ubisoft, always the lovers of personal computing, have decreed that I Am Alive, which a few years ago was a pretty big hyped game. Now it's kind of fallen off the radar a little bit. It was just recently resurfaced. It looks good. It looks really good. Is going to be a console exclusive. There will not be a PC version.
Hmm.
The creator of the game cites piracy.
Wow.
And he basically said, you know, if the support were there, we'd do it. But if only 50,000 people are going to buy it, it's not worth our time. And he's right.
Yeah.
He is definitely right. And I mean, Ubisoft, they burned a lot of goodwill with this always-on DLC scheme that they brought on. I think it was originally with Assassin's Creed 2.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, they did it again with Splinter Cell Conviction, you know. And people got all pissy about the fact that you had to be logged into an internet connection and had to connect to Ubisoft's Uplay servers in order to run the game, you know. Okay, fair enough, you know, like, you had to connect to Ubisoft's Battle.net, I mean Uplay, or, you know, to play your game, you know, and when you bought it off of Steam, logged in with your Steam account, you know, like, It's kind of a shame, because I Am Alive, I think it's coming initially as a DLC product. And then,
okay.
Again, it's a neat idea, it's a unique idea, it's really different, and it would be a great match for Steam. Always on DRM.
And final bit of news for the night, something a little bit lighter. PETA!
Is that the guys who did Lord of the Rings?
It's wetter, you... douche. The people.
What's it stand for?
People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
No, what's WETA stand for? Women for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
No, WETA is a kind of insect, isn't it? It is. It's an insect.
I'm going to slap the two of you.
Australian bug of some sort.
It probably New Zealand. Will kill you.
Who knows?
don't call a New Zealander an Aussie. It gets violent.
Oh, my bad. My bad.
That's like people from Nova Scotia calling us Newfies. That is our word!
Or people from...
Actually, yeah, no. Nova Scotians are just pretty much our brothers across the water.
That's right.
Especially after seeing that video, man. Northern Halley is downtown St. John's with less hills.
Anyway.
People from the Ethical Treatment of Animals set their sights on Mario, of all things. Super Mario.
Really?
Because he wears a fur coat, the Tanuki suit, in a game that's 20 years old. Really, PETA? Like, do they want people to take them seriously?
Man,
at all?
He's a plumber. Come on, give the guy a break.
He's a blue-collar worker.
That's right.
He's probably living in, like, a fucking two-room shithole in Brooklyn somewhere.
That's right.
Benson Hoist.
What has the man done? Really, come on.
Really? Other than wear a fur coat made out of dog raccoons.
What's it, like, guys, you know what?
Which he probably caught in the alleyway behind his flat.
Yeah. Probably, going through his garbage.
All joking aside, you know, this is kind of like targeting Mickey Mouse for subverting children with the whole no shirt, no shoes, no service deal. Right? But Super Mario 3 came out in 1990 in North America.
Was it that long ago?
Yes, it was that long ago.
I thought it was longer.
Dude, I was 8 years old when that game came out. Now I'm 29.
Did PETA even exist in 1990? Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I'm sure.
They probably did, but... Who cares?
You know, I said this on the Facebook.
He's not a real character. It's not a real fur coat. It's a drawing.
Is a tanuki even a real animal?
Oh, yes, it is a real animal. And it's endangered, apparently.
Oh,
it's an endangered animal, which is probably why
it is
being like this.
Of course it is.
I don't know.
It has to be.
It probably is.
But I
mentioned this on the Facebook group. If you guys are out there, go to our Facebook page. Like us. I mentioned it on this. I'm going to mention it again here. That, you know, in the Old Testament of the Bible, people sacrifice animals. They sacrifice them.
But they're like goats and cows. They're ugly.
See, I don't get Pettit. Like, they're after Super Mario.
Because Tanuki is a cute name.
Oh, God.
Seals are cute, Kevin.
I just don't get it. Anyway, they made a video game, right? They made a Flash game where you play as a skeleton, I think.
No, you're not a skeleton. You're the fleshy remains of the... You're a tanuki with its skin ripped off.
And you're trying to get Mario. Because all of a sudden I'm wearing
you're Pamela Anderson.
Oh, my God.
As you're running, you're leaving bloody smears on the ground.
Oh, apparently it's grotesque.
Yes.
Oh,
and I think they're probably getting a lot of hits, not from people who are interested in protecting the tanuki, but from gamers who are interested in how grotesque this game is. The very people that they're trying to be against are probably going to see this
game.
Because
they're looking at it like, holy shit, boy, Mario's hardcore.
But see, now here's the thing. That site will get millions of hits. They'll announce that their attack against tanuki was a resounding success.
Yeah.
And then they'll get that much more fundraising.
It's bizarre.
Yeah.
It's bizarre.
But you know what's... You know what it's not going to affect?
What's that?
3DS sales.
That's true.
Pretty much the only way the 3DS sales could get any worse is if they release, you know, like, Schindler's List, the game.
Dude.
Oh, I can't believe you went there. All right, so that's the news.
That's the news.
Now, guys, I got a blast point. I've got an ambush topic for you.
Okay.
That we'll hit on very quickly. On this marathon podcast,
This has been a long one.
This has been a long one. Okay, here it is. All right, you have a friend, or maybe a young relative, who's not a gamer, but wants desperately to become a gamer.
Mm.
Okay, now let's say money's no object.
Okay,
you've decided to give them for their bar mitzvah or whatever, holy communion, graduation, whatever. You're going to give them a system. Okay, no. You're going to give them a system and five games.
All right.
Now, they're not a gamer.
They're not gamers.
But they want to get into it desperately.
Okay.
So you need to give them a system and five games.
All right.
That could possibly, you know, do it for them.
Get them into gaming.
What's it going to be?
Do you want to go or what?
And it could be any generation.
You go first.
But no mixing.
No mixing.
No. So a system and five games.
That'll turn them into a gamer?
That will cover the bases.
Okay, that will turn him into a gamer.
Yeah.
An Xbox 360.
Okay.
Call of Duty Modern Warfare. Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3.
No.
Call of Duty Black Ops. Call of Duty World at War.
You never. Are you serious?
It seems to work for everybody else.
Go forth, little dudes.
Go forth and bone.
That's terrible. All right, okay. John? What are you going
to
do?
I want to get somebody into gaming.
Yeah.
As much as my roots tells me to go with the Super Nintendo.
Right.
No.
I would take the money. I would build a time machine. I would take them back to 1995 when 32-bit was still relevant and didn't look like day-old ass. I would buy them the Sony PlayStation.
Right.
The original Sony PlayStation.
There we go.
I would get them a copy of Final Fantasy VII.
Okay.
The game that changed everything.
Yep.
I would get them the original Metal Gear Solid. Another game that changed everything.
That was a pretty impenetrable game, though.
You think so?
Metal Gear Solid was pretty tough.
That'd be the fifth one they'd play.
Okay.
Okay. I would get them... Which one was the best of the Crash Bandicoot games?
Crash 3, I believe.
Crash 3?
Was considered the...
It still has to be Naughty Dog.
Crash Warped.
Crash Bandicoot Warped,
yeah.
Okay, to get him a copy of Crash Warped, that's three games.
Tekken 3.
And as much as I want to say Ironhander, just to get him a decent racing game, because racing was huge back then.
Gran Turismo.
No.
No.
Ridge Racer Type 4.
Oh, there you go.
Nice.
Because Gran Turismo, man, is also a little bit impenetrable. If that's your first racing game, that's going to...
Yeah, can I change mine? mine was a joke.
Of course
you can. Okay, mine was a joke.
That was to buy him time.
That was a joke.
Go ahead.
Super Nintendo.
Yep.
It would be Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
Okay.
Super Mario World.
Yep.
Chrono Trigger. Yes.
Definitely.
Final Fantasy 3.
Yep. Street Fighter 2.
Street Fighter 2. And take whatever's left over and go get a drink.
Link to the Past.
Oh, yeah. God, yeah, Link to the Past.
That could be...
There's too much good stuff on Super Nintendo.
Yes,
there was. That was a great system.
What was good was really, really good.
Yeah.
But everything else was broken.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess you're right. It's still my favorite controller of all time, though.
Really?
Man,
I do love my DualShock. Ever since the PS1, I gotta say I love my DualShock.
Yeah.
But with this, we're not talking about best controllers of all
time.
That's true.
Yeah. Okay, so for me, I haven't really thought about my answer for this, but
TurboGrafx 16,
Ninja Spirit.
Oh yeah,
no,
Bloody Wolf.
Yeah, the only three good games for it. Box Adventure, definitely,
and Fighting Street.
Okay, no, that's not my answer. So it'll be a PS3, obviously for me.
Okay, PS3, good man.
PS3,
Lair.
Shut the hell up. Okay, I want to make a good. Kind of cover a lot of bases, except for sports games.
A good cross section.
So, PS3 with Skyrim, Little Big Planet,
nice,
Darksiders.
Ooh.
Okay.
Ooh. Speaking my language.
We got to give him a platformer. What's a good platformer on PS3?
Little Big Planet.
Oh, Little Big. Of course. Okay. So, Little Big Planet. What did they say again?
Skyrim.
Darksiders. God of War 3.
Nice.
And...
Sandwich.
No.
Uncharted. Yes, Uncharted, of course.
There we go.
Yep.
You'd be of the three of us,
yeah,
you would be the favorite uncle at Christmas time.
Oh, good.
Dude, no, you would not have a time machine.
But the time machine is meaningless, John. The time machine serves no purpose. I would buy a time machine, then I would go buy a PlayStation.
If they'd never seen a video game before, if they'd never even set eyes upon a video game before...
You wouldn't need the time machine. You just give them a PlayStation 1. Look at this cutting-edge machine. Ooh, it's cutting-edge. And then they play it, and then they're like... They see a PS3 the next day, and they're like, you lied to me, Uncle John!
Then I'd have the time machine. I could take him back to 1984 and we go see the World Slavery Tour. And that would be awesome.
On that note, John, least favorite uncle. Kev, favorite uncle. Steve,
oh, yeah.
Comfortably in the middle. Unless I actually did.
Possibly a pederast.
Oh, that's just not
cool. 8-year-olds, dude.
That's just not cool at all.
Oh, this has been an epic podcast.
Epic Link podcast. For epic length video games that we talked about this evening. If there's anything we want you to take away from this podcast, it is...
I never broke the law! I am the law!
We're out of here.